Welcome to RA Podcast, the official retro achievement podcast. I am Draco655, joined by my co-host, Shudzi.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We got another awesome episode lined up for you guys today.
And King Sizzle.
Hey, what's up, podcast? How's it going? Hope you guys are doing good.
We also have a very special guest with us today. He is a fantastic streamer and players on Retro Achievement. Welcome to the podcast, Buttcave TV.
Thank you, Draco. I'm glad to be here. King Sizzle, Shootsy, thank you guys for inviting me. I am humbled, I am honored, and I'm really glad, I'm really excited to get started.
Thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast. We are so happy to have you here. For today's episode, we will be asking a series of questions to get to know you better. Let's get things started. So my first question I have for you is, we always like to start off by asking our guests this, because it seems like everyone has an interesting story. How did you discover Retro Achievement?
Well, I mean, I discovered it through streaming. I started off on Twitch as a streamer, and being in the retro community, I follow a lot of retro streamers, and one in particular, I think you know the guy, Maximilian, was a good friend of mine through a charity event that I participated in. And watching him, I saw him doing retro achievements, and I saw some of what he was doing, some of the strategizing, some of the joy that happens when an achievement pops, and things of that nature. And it got me interested. It kind of piqued my curiosity, because you'd see these little when you pop the achievement, as we say, and you get these the alert that pops up was very intriguing to me, because I've seen that in modern games, of course, and never really paid that much attention to it in modern games. But there was something interesting to me about the fact that these were added on after the fact of the games being released, obviously, because new technology, and being able to revisit those games and get achievements that were not only created in retrospect, but also created by the community. So it was really interesting to me that people were creating their own achievements and doing their own thing to kind of spark new interest and bring new things to these old games that I, for one, treasured in my childhood. And I think a lot of people also did. But yeah, just seeing other streamers and the joys that they have gotten out of it really piqued my interest. It got me looking into it. And then I started working on them on my own. And it was, you know, the rest is history, as they say.
That's a very interesting, like Max always bring always like good joy and stuff, and bring always good people like you and I. Second question I have, what is the appeal of retro achievement for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of went over that a little bit, but it's the appeal of the fact that it's community driven. It's also the appeal of the fact that it was something that was done in love, to bring back interest, or excuse me, bring a different angle of interest into these retro games. Because we already have, we have speedrunners, which are awesome. We have people who do randos, which are awesome. We got casual players, which is what I consider myself before I started, and still consider myself, quite frankly, with retro achievements. And then you have the retro achievements, which just adds a new angle to it that just wasn't there before. And I don't want to say there was necessarily a void, but maybe a void that we didn't even know we had until this came about and we started really digging into it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. What is your goal on RA?
Really, I'm not that competitive, so I'm not really, going after like being at the top spot or anything like that. But I do like the feeling I get, the little dopamine hit that you get every time you hit an achievement, and the bigger one that you get, especially when you finally master a game. You're asking what are my goals? I guess my goals is just to have fun with it and just work to better myself as a gamer and to learn more about these games, using retro achievements as kind of an avenue to do that through, and to bring good content to my viewers and the retro community, and just kind of have them vicariously share that joy through me, and then also be able to give that to them, and also get that fulfillment in myself of knowing that I'm able to do that, and I'm able to, do some of these things that I was never able to do before.
Okay. How did you decide what game to play on Retro Achievement?
See, I don't really plan out that far ahead. I just usually, whatever piques my fancy at the time, I was like, okay, you know, I like platforming games. So I'll tell you how I decided to play the first game that I took seriously on Retro Achievements and Badged, which was Super Mario 64. And I was inspired by watching Frank, you know him as Pulse XP, played through the same game. I'm like, you know, I haven't played Mario 64 in a while. And I've been meaning to take the retro achievements more seriously. I think I'll do that because I saw how much fun he was having with it. And it looked like something that was doable to me. So I kind of go through and I look for games that, for one, I already love. And two, that I look at the achievement set and it looks doable to me as, you know, a self-proclaimed casual, filthy casual player. And, you know, I just look for something that looks like it will be fun, doable, and that I think would be enjoyable to share with the community.
Interesting. After that, we have what are some of your favorite set that you have played on Ori?
Okay, that's a good one too, because I'm kind of a newbie when it comes to retro achievements. I've actually only been working on it for maybe less than a year, maybe 5-6 months, something like that. So I only have like 6 badges currently, but my favorites have been Super Mario 64, probably because it was my first. Castlevania, Super Castlevania 4 on the Super Nintendo, because that's my favorite Castlevania, and that was a lot of fun to play through. Banjo-Kazooie, to name another Nintendo 64 game, was particularly fun because I really loved that game, and it was really fun to go through and learn more about and dig deeper into.
What are some of the greatest challenges that you have overcome in your retro achievement journey? Any particular hard achievement or achievements standing out? Like, or if you want to give us some example or maybe a funny moment there?
Yeah, some examples would be, I hate to keep going back to Mario 64, but there was a couple of achievements. There's like 3 in particular I could name, and they all involved two of them involved gathering of the red coins, and the other one was in Jolly Roger Bay. There was an achievement where you had to, I forget the exact name of the star, but shoot to the star, is paraphrasing the name of it, without using the cannon. And it was really difficult for me to learn that maneuver. Cause I don't know if this is considered a spoiler, but basically what you have to do is you have to do a couple of really, precisely timed long jumps, in consecutive order, followed by a wall kick up to get that star without using the cannon. It took me forever to try to get that one done, but it was very rewarding when I finally did it. I stuck to my guns. It took many, many, many tries, but we finally did get it. The other one is the red coins on same game, what's the name of the level where you have to, it's Bowser's sub. You have to get all the red coins before you sink Bowser's sub. That was another one that had a tricky jump in it that was really hard to get. Another one that we'll talk about a little bit later is the Castlevania 4 Deathless Run. There's a little bit more to the story than that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But that was a particularly difficult one for me to obtain, and I was very excited once I finally did.
I remember that submarine when I needed to do a triple jumps and just dive. It was so precise and took me so much effort, and that was very painful. But I know the feel when you actually got it at the end. Like, oh my God, it's like you cannot believe you got that.
Right, because there's all that, you know, because especially in a hard one like that, there's all those emotions to go into it. You know, first there's, you know, the excitement of, okay, I'm going to try this thing that's hard. And then there's a lot of frustration that comes with it naturally with, you know, having difficulty getting it. And then, you know, you get the frustration. And then when you finally get it, that's when that, you know, that euphoria hits you and that excitement and that joy just, you know, overcomes you. And it's quite a feeling. I really like getting the difficult achievements.
Yeah. And congrats to getting those as well, because that's really a good accomplishment to have. Mm-hmm. My next question is, are there any type of achievement that you personally like? Any that you personally dislike also?
So I do like ones that present a challenge, one that is going to take a lot, you know, maybe not tedious, but a lot of attempts to do just because of the difficulty curve. I mean, there's quite the rush you get when you do a damageless boss fight, for example. That damageless boss fight at the end of Banjo-Kazooie, for one, was very difficult to get, but it was something that was obtainable. It's something that pushed my ability. It was just very rewarding experience to finally get that Gruntilda damageless fight. Don't like, that's a toughie, because I always look at it through the lens of, you know, a lot of these streamers, well, that's part of the game. It's built into the game. It's part of the experience of the game. Like for example, right now, I am actually revisiting Super Mario 64 because the bonus, I think it was a bonus set of achievements, were added onto the main set. So I'm going back and getting all of the new achievements that were added to that. And they're gathering like all of the coins in the game. When you're going through it, it kind of seems like, wow, this is a lot to do. I mean, it seems really difficult to do when you don't know where all the coins are. And it is something that, as a viewer, from a viewer, because I always look at things from the perspective of, because I'm a streamer first, what my viewers are experiencing and going through and collecting all the coins. In the back of my mind, I'm wondering, is anybody really liking watching this? It seems like it's kind of repetitive. But at the same time, we're getting the achievements and people are getting excited about it. So to say that I don't like it would be a stretch, because I do also understand that that's part of the game and it should be experienced and it should be an achievement to get all the coins in the game. But on the other hand, it's kind of one of those things that's like, yeah, I'm coin collecting, you know?
I mean, at the same time, when you have such achievement like that, like they are very, very hard. It's feel like you're the audience with the viewer, like they share the same amount of expression with you at the same time. It's like, oh, we got it. Like, it's almost like we got it together. It's like, yes. Oh, the energy, it's fantastic.
Yeah, there's that empathetic relationship that the audience has with a streamer that's doing retro achievements, that they, you know, same thing that people get when they root for their favorite sports team and their sports team wins. They get really excited. They weren't there doing the thing, but they were watching the thing and they were participating in the thing, and they get that feeling through that empathetic response that is really, really, really an awesome thing.
I got another interesting question for you. How has achievement hunting changed the way in which you approach games in today's?
You know, I don't really know that it necessarily has. It hasn't as far as approaching what games I pick to play necessarily. I think maybe there's a little bit more strategizing that I do, because I do plan things out. Once I start going for the harder achievements, I think, okay, well, I got to do this, I got to do that. So there's a little bit more preparation than I normally go through with the game, because normally I just throw the game in and play it and just have fun and, you know, and make jokes and have a good time before retro achievements. And now I do the same thing, but then there's a little bit more to it in that I got to strategize, like, okay, I'm trying to think of a specific example, but nothing's coming to me. But you definitely, there's a lot more planning involved when I approach a game versus before I started doing retro achievements.
Awesome. Are there any game that you would like to see added on Ori?
See, and since I'm so new to it, here's the thing. When I go look for games to play on Ori, I have not yet found one that I want to play that wasn't already there. So I'm going to go, and I think I heard through the grapevine that you guys are already working on these, but I would like to see GameCube sets. Even though I do have some difficulty running some GameCube games through RetroArch, which is how I access retro achievements, there are a few GameCube games that I would love to run achievements on. Wind Waker, for example, springs to mind immediately. Perhaps Luigi's Mansion. There's probably a couple others that I'm not thinking of. They got a Resident Evil 4 was on, I think originally released on PlayStation, or excuse me, GameCube, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a few others, but yeah, I would like to see some GameCube stuff.
Oh man, you kick on my vibes there when you speak about GameCube, because I love this console so much, and I always talk like a lot about this one, and I'm very excited to see in the futures. Mm-hmm. Another question I have for you: what are the most proud in your journey into retro achievement so far?
That would have to be. There's so many good ones. I would say CV4, it really stands out to me, Castlevania 4 on the Super Nintendo, because it was one of the first games that I really got into. It's a game that I played as a kid, for one thing, but it was also one of the first games I got into streaming regularly. And it's a game I really, really have a lot of fond memories of, and I'm particularly attached to. So having that set, I am particularly proud of.
Nice. So here's my last question before I would kick off to shoot for his segment. Mm-hmm. Do you have any rivals on retro achievement? People who compete with to stay above their site rank and use that as motivation to keep you playing?
This is boring, but not particularly. No, I don't really. I'm not really that competitive of a person, and except for if you count competing against myself. So I don't really look for any rivalries. I kind of, you know, joked around with Pulse XP. You guys know him as Frank too. When it came to the Super Mario 64 bonus set that we were working on, and I kind of teased him a little bit, but that's more of me just poking the bear because I have fun poking the bear because I know he's going to get it before me. But no, I don't really have any rivals. I don't really approach it from that perspective, but I do see that and I get the excitement of that, and it's really fun to watch other people when they get into that mode.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun to just kind of see, you know, what your friends are doing and kind of compare sometimes. But it's also, you know, as you mentioned, one of the great things about the site is just that there are so many different ways to enjoy the site in itself and to have entertainment value out of that. That kind of is a unique aspect in its own. And also just that you also have had the pleasure of doing the Damageless Gruntilda achievement. There's definitely a satisfaction with the learning curve of that one.
Oh, it also, was, yeah, Jinjo's especially, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, with the soft lock with the statues.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got the soft lock once too, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, based on how long it took me, I got the soft lock a few times myself, and I was like, okay, GG, great, great, great. Yeah, so,
love that.
That's
part of it, though, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's just part of the, you know, getting in the repetition, and then also the, I think the other one with that set that was pretty fun was the Hollow Honeycomb, so the minimum health, just cool. Going through the whole game. That was definitely an interesting one as well. That one.
Yep.
Yeah. But on to my questions here before I could go on and on. What is your favorite game genre, and what would you say is your least favorite game genre?
Favorite's got to be harder to pick. Because I really love RPGs. I really love platformers. I really love survival horror. If I were going to have to pick one, though, it would probably be platformers, retro platformers. And as far as least favorite, probably sports games. I'm just not a sports guy, so I really wouldn't have any interest in like football games or basketball games or anything like that. So I'd go with sports games.
That's very fair. I think, you know, especially with older retro games, for the sports genre, they're very different. Might be code for not as good because mechanically they're so hard to, you know, implement things.
Yeah, like the modern games where it's like you're watching it live on TV pretty much with the graphics and with the mechanics and everything. And plus, you know, sports games don't really hold their value like other games because a lot of it, you know, deals with roster changes and things like that as time goes on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast, but it's so night and day between modern sports games and the older sports games.
10-yard fight versus Madden.
exactly. So if you could only choose one, what is your all-time favorite game?
Oh, that's actually an easy one. Chrono Trigger. My first RPG I ever played. Still my favorite RPG, well, obviously, because it's also my favorite game of all time. There's just a feeling I get from that game that I just don't really get from other games. Even Final Fantasy, though I love Final Fantasy, the Final Fantasy series. And it's probably the nostalgia and the fact that it was my first, but it's just, you know, it's 10 out of 10. I mean, the music is great, the graphics is for the time, and still hold up, in my opinion, with the beautiful 2D sprite work in the game. I said the music already, but the music, you know, just above and beyond my favorite OST in any video game of all time. And also going to be my next badge. I'm going to be working on my first RPG really soon for retro achievements, and I picked my favorite one.
That's awesome, because I think a couple things on that. You know, number one, I think so oftentimes we enjoy the mechanics of a game so much that the little things like the sprite detail and the music can get overlooked, and sprite detail in particular for me is one that I'm just like, these people, based on the limitations they had, really went the extra mile.
There's a lot of love in them.
Yeah, you can tell that a lot of love went into that artwork. I guiltily say this, but I am sitting at like 16 out of 85 on Chrono Trigger. I need to get back through it. I think I picked it up at one point, and then I just, you know, you spread yourself too thin with games, and then you forget that you're a third through a game, and that is one that I want to I want to pick up again. That and like, yeah. I've never gone through.
Forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to definitely tune in for that and probably pick up some strats and tips. Cause that one I want to go back through, and I know that I would have a lot of fun with that game. I'm somebody that, RPGs, I need to kind of get a little bit more back into, because it's been a while since I just sat back and enjoyed a nice, you know, a nice long playthrough of a game and really got to, yeah. So, do you have a favorite video game console? And if so, what is it?
Well, we're just going to stay on the Super Nintendo, because that's definitely my favorite console. I mean, you got Chrono Trigger, you got Final Fantasy VI, you got Donkey Kong Country, you got Link to the Past. You got Super Metroid. I mean, you could go on and on. There's just so many great titles, and to me that was the golden era, the peak of Nintendo as far as my feelings for them go. So yeah, I mean, Super Nintendo, easy choice, final answer.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, the Super Nintendo has so many fantastic different titles and collections across that. I can certainly appreciate that as well. What would you say is the most frustrating moment that you've experienced in a video game? Not necessarily retro achievements, but that is also applicable as well.
Okay, so it is retro achievements. And I don't, you guys may know this, because this is a story that my audience is quite well aware of. And a lot of them were there for it. It goes back to Castlevania 4. And it's not real. And it wasn't the fault of retro achievements. So let me first start out with that. It was my own fault. But it was the deathless run of Castlevania 4 that I had been trying for, it took me two or three streams to get through this, maybe four streams. I don't remember the exact number, but it took me a long time to get through this thing. And I finally did it. It was my first or second attempt of the day of that stream. Got to the end, killed Dracula, no deaths. Everybody in chat erupted in GG's. GG was just flooding my chat. I was excited. And then no Chivo. Chivo didn't pop. Everybody's still celebrating, and I'm sitting here like, what the heck's going on? Oh my God. And then I remembered I wanted to do a practice run the night before. So I didn't want to pop the Chivo on accident in case I accidentally got it. So I turned retro achievements off in RetroArch. And then I think you can see where this is going. Next morning, I realized after I got the deathless Chivo, I forgot to turn it back on. Oh my God. Everybody's celebrating. I'm freaking out. Oh my God. I didn't pop the Chivo. I go in, I pull up live in front of everybody. Chivo's just turned off. They see me turn it back on. And then that's when chat changed their tune. They're like, oh my God, what did you do? You bonehead. I was like, I didn't have an explanation. So I started running it again. And everybody's like, you know, you could submit the run. You know, you have it on video. You could submit it to RA, and those guys are real cool. They might give it to you as long as you explain things and everything, which I did. I highlighted the entire run, submitted a ticket through RA. Next day, got a message back. Hey, we took care of it for you. You got it. No problem, because you guys are awesome and you saved my butt on that one. But that was the most frustrating thing that ever happened. And it was my own fault.
Yeah, I can say that. I appreciate you sharing your experience with that, because I can relate to that so well, as far as being in situations where, you know, maybe, for example, I guess for me, kind of an opposite, but still a flub on my part, where, you know, I accidentally the achievement triggers because it's miscoded. I reset the achievement, but then I don't close the emulator. So I can't that's a mistake that I've made in the past, where I can't re-earn, you know, I can't, when I want to earn the achievement legitimately, assuming it's coded correctly, I can't do so, because if you accidentally earn it, if it mistriggers or whatever, if it's not coded correctly, and then you don't, you know, you reset the achievement on the site, but you don't reset the emulator, it still thinks that you've earned it. So, but you know, like you said, a big shout out to the development team. Mm-hmm. I've had so many great experiences working with people on the development team and working through the issues. And that is one of the biggest things about that community vibe that you talked about a little bit, is just being able to communicate with people and be able to resolve things so that, you know, people who play sets in the future can enjoy them for what they are. And then there's also those, you know, those little frustrating moments that we have, like you talked about with achievements, you know, turning on and off, or you tweak a setting on RetroArch, or something happens. And you know, it's sometimes it's embarrassing, sometimes it's not, but it always makes for a good story.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I can't praise you guys or praise the devs enough. Cause like I said, you guys took what was, could have been really a, not necessarily a, that bad of a situation, just kind of a frustrating situation, which I thought I was going to have to do it again. And then just took care of it because, you know, the proof was there. So you guys knew I did it. And you just turned a frustrating situation into a good story and something that ended up not being bad at all in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So big shout outs to everyone on the development team and the, the amount of work that you guys put in, because it's always amazing to me that people are willing to donate so much of their time that they could be spending doing just about anything else in the world, but they are that passionate about this project and what it does mean to them. So
you're here.
Yeah, absolutely. So outside of RA, are you playing any titles outside of the Retro Achievements orbit?
Not particularly at the moment. I got a lot of things going on, you know, outside of, you know, streaming and gaming and stuff right now that doesn't give me enough time to really do that. So mostly it's RA. I have recently been starting installing some games through Steam. So I've kind of booted up Fallout 4 the other day and I played a little bit of that, but I didn't get too deep into it. But other than that, the only other game I played recently outside of RA was, and this has been like 6 months ago, was Red Dead Redemption 2.
I like it. A person that's deep in the RA, that's got a hard commitment to mostly RA. That's pretty much my lifestyle these days. It's just very difficult to get into modern games for me for whatever reason. And we have such a great community here that I can't think of anywhere else I would rather be and enjoy games with my friends than RA. I met a lot of great people through it, including Pulse, who you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So
great guy.
Yeah, Frank is an awesome streamer, awesome guy, and very, very friendly. And
big heart on that guy.
Yeah, very big heart for sure.
I actually had the pleasure of meeting Pulse Frank in real life pre-COVID. Took me out to eat. Took me and a couple other streamers out to eat. Had a nice dinner at Mexican Dinner, and went to a retro arcade and hung out with him and his kids, and Traz from Australia was there too. I don't want to do too many name drops, but it was a lot of fun. And Frank is a beautiful person, and I love him to death.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I know Traz as well. And Frank's whole community, I mean, he's fostered a great community. And you know, he's always, even for people that are new to his stream, he does a really good job kind of just, you know, making them feel welcome and making them feel like this is a community for everyone, you know, no matter what your experience is. So he's a great guy.
He was one of the people that really encouraged me early on, because like I said, I was following him on the Super Mario 64 badge, and as soon as I told him I was doing that, he was in my corner and he was cheering me on the whole time. He's just that kind of guy. He's a wonderful person
for sure. Kind of switching gears here a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Oh yeah. So I recently started a podcast. I don't have a fancy name. It's just the BCTV podcast. And it's kind of a laid back kind of thing. And it's kind of almost like a love letter to the retro community as a whole, not specifically Retro Achievements, though. A few of us involved with the podcast are Retro Achievement streamers. But it's basically just a laid back, chilled kind of conversational type podcast. We don't do a lot of planning for it. There's no predefined questions or anything like that. It's just, we sit down, turn on the cameras. You know, I ask the person to talk about themselves, and then we'll ask questions as we go. But it's basically kind of like this, just to get to know the community a little bit better, to get to know other streamers a little bit better, have a way to spotlight them in an environment and in a way that is comfortable to streamers, in that it's more of it's more casual and just click start and go live kind of thing, where people just come on and be themselves, have a good conversation. We could talk about Twitch news. We could talk about your stream. We could talk about, you know, pretty much anything related to the community that they want, or even outside of the community, if that's, you know, what they want to talk about, because it's more about getting to know the guests and kind of like what you guys are doing, but maybe just a little bit less of a structured format. And it's been a lot of fun. We've had two episodes so far, and we're actually going to be Our third episode is going to be today, a little bit later. And yeah, it's been a rewarding experience. It's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing a lot more of it. As you guys know, podcasting, you know, it does require some work up front, but it's such a rewarding experience and it's so much fun.
Yeah, we definitely enjoy the experience as well of just being able to have a chat amongst ourselves and kind of, you know, have a, I guess, a bit of a sounding board. And I did have a little bit of an opportunity to tune in and catch a little bit of your podcast last week. And I have to say that it was just really entertaining to kind of hear about some of the memories of the past and just growing up, and reminded me a lot of, you know, I think you guys might've talked a little bit about rentals and things like that. And it just really brings back a lot of memories. It's always interesting to hear people's stories because I feel like, you know, in the retro gaming community, and maybe it's not exclusive to just our community, but everybody's got a story just about kind of where they came from and, you know, why they're here on Retro Achievements and what it means to them as far as, you know, what they're doing every day on it. Are they playing for points to be competitive but enjoying what they're doing? Are they, you know, just, I know when I first started out, I played a lot of titles that I enjoyed as a kid, and that's really kind of how I got my start. So it's always interesting to hear people's stories about it. And I, assuming that I'm still around today, I'm sure I will be. I would definitely love to tune into another episode of BCTV because I really enjoyed what I did here last week for your guys' podcast. And it's great that there is more podcasts that are coming out about this subject matter because it really adds a lot to just content on Twitch and also the conversation that we have going on around the retro community. So thank you for making another podcast and being out there and, you know, adding more content to the community and ultimately making it a better experience for everybody by having those stories that people can share and things like that. So,
wow. I couldn't ask for a better review than that. That was, thank you so much. That really, it's really good to hear stuff like that. Because I, to be quite frank, I was nervous going into this whole podcast thing, but luckily I've got a great team behind me. Just as you guys have, you know, King Sizzle, you, Shootsy, Draco, working on the podcast. I've got Charred Monk working with me. I've got That Family Games. I've got Captain Dark, and behind the scenes, I've got Lee Clips and Golf 416. I mean, it's really a team effort to put this thing together. And I got such a wonderful group of people working with me, and to hear that, that people are finding value in the content that we are creating is really, it really makes me feel good. And thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you for your kind words. I really do appreciate that. And I look forward to making many more of these because we have a lot of fun making them.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great things about podcasting is, you know, it's such a simple process. You know, obviously as you kind of scale up a little bit, try and improve the quality overall, but you know, when you have such a comfortable subject to talk about with retro, I like I said before, I really did enjoy what I heard. So please do keep going with it. And I'm sure, you know, people will continue to be drawn to it because there's just something about the retro community. It's just got a feel to it that, I don't know, just there isn't, I don't get that feeling anywhere else I go. But
there's a closeness. There's a closeness in this community that I have not found outside. I think that's what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, people are very loyal to this community because of the cherished memories, which I think is something that retro has, that something else that no other genre on Twitch could possibly have, in that it's the cherished memories of childhood, and it's revisiting those memories and introducing. And making new memories through things like Retro Achievements and introducing these things to new players. Cause I have a lot of people that come by my stream who are, you know, in their early 20s. I've had people, you know, in their late teens coming by and really getting into retro games. And it's really exciting to see that spark in new players coming and enjoying these things that, you know, I grew up with and I have such fond memories of. It's really heartwarming. And I really love that aspect of it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Again, you know, I can go on and on, obviously, about the community and the family feel that we really have in this community. And also, you know, if you ever have the pleasure of seeing somebody play a set that you've played, that's got to be one of the best streams you'll ever watch, is seeing somebody that plays a set that you've mastered and doing them go through that
you know what they're feeling and what they're thinking, and you know they're ready to jump out of their skin at any moment, and then they hit that Chivo pop and you get that feeling all over again. It's so great. I love it.
I agree. It's like almost an aftershock type of feeling when they get that damageless or that deathless that you know, you almost kind of relive it vicariously through them. So I definitely agree with you on that. So we talked a little bit about that you're mostly focused on RA these days. You've played a few modern titles outside. Do you own any modern gaming consoles? How do you feel about modern gaming in general, would you say?
You know, I like modern gaming. I really do. I don't have any of the newest current gen. I do have a PS4. It's a launch PS4. So that would be my most modern console. I also have a gaming PC that isn't top of the line, but it's about a mid-range. So I can play some modern stuff on that as well. And I like to. I'm definitely interested in things like, you know, the PlayStation 5. I would like to, you know, ultimately, I would love to have a PlayStation 5 for all of the exclusives that you would get through that, and then have a really beefed up PC for everything else, and of course with the retro, you know, with RetroArch and everything else going on too. But I do have, you know, the only really problem I have is, like, you know, things happen, like these new consoles get released, and then the consoles are great and everything, but then you get the whole deal, and I don't want to get into too much of the politics about it, but the drama with the scalpers and things like that, which I'm totally obviously against. So there are some bad aspects to it too, but I do like the modern graphics. I do. One day I'd like to get a VR setup. I've never actually done a VR setup. I would like to do something like that for certain games. Heck, I would love to revisit some old games with it too. I mean, I saw somebody, I think somebody was working on World of Warcraft for virtual reality. That was couple years ago, though. I don't know if that's still a thing, but that's a game I used to play a lot of that I would like to, that would be kind of interesting to visit in a VR scenario to me. So I'm definitely a retro gamer at heart, but I do love modern as well.
That's awesome. And it's kind of funny you bring up VR, because I have a Quest, an Oculus Quest myself. Of course, the Quest 2 is out now. I wish I had waited a little bit, because within like a year, the Quest 2 came out, and it's cheaper, it's lighter, it's more powerful. But you can actually put RetroArch on the Quest.
You can.
And it's awesome, because what it does is, so when you put it on the Quest and then you load a game, it's like having a giant flat screen TV floating in front of you wherever you're looking.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. When they had the movies, you could go watch movies and it's like you're sitting in the theater.
Yeah.
But with a flat screen retro game. That's cool.
Yeah. I would definitely recommend that people give that a shot. Before I became more of an active person in the community in general, kind of when I was streaming less and kind of just keeping a bit more to myself, you know, I'd come home from work, because I worked 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. back in the day, pre-COVID days, back in the office, and I'd come home and I'd just throw on the headset and play retro achievements at like 3 a.m, just sitting on my bed looking straight up at a flat screen TV in the air.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool experience to do that. And you can, it has just a Bluetooth pairing option. So for people that do want to get into it, just pair your Bluetooth controller to the Quest and you're good to go. But that's definitely a fun experience I would recommend for people to try as well. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I just say, start saving your pennies, kids. Get your VR.
Yeah, get a obviously VR, it's a
retro achievements.
Yeah, and definitely not cheap. So if you already have a PC, then that's probably the best bet. And also a little more proficient, because moving files can be a little bit tedious versus just having the PC and being able to do everything very quickly.
Yeah.
But still awesome experience nonetheless. Last question I have for you, and then I will kick it over to King Sizzle. Tell us a little bit more about some of your favorite gaming memories from your childhood.
Okay. The obvious one that comes to mind is the Christmas morning I got my very first Nintendo, my NES. Because I remember leading up to that Christmas, I begged and begged and begged my dad to get me a Nintendo for Christmas. And he kept saying, nope, I'm not going to get you one. They're a waste of money. Video games are a fad. I'm not buying you a stupid video game console. Of course, he was lying. I didn't know that at the time. He just wanted it to be a surprise. But I remember, you know, I was fooled. I got up Christmas morning, fully expected not to get that Nintendo. And lo and behold, under the box, not even wrapped up, just sitting under the tree, was that NES. And I just ran. I didn't quite have the reaction of the Nintendo 64 kid, but it was pretty close. I was pretty excited about that. And then just, you know, unboxing that thing, hooking it up to my TV. We got an old CRT TV, put it in my bedroom. We got, you know, well, it was not an old CRT at the time, obviously, because that was the current tech. But yeah, hooking that thing up and just loading up Mario Brothers, playing Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt and the other game I got, which was Top Gun for some reason. But I did finally learn on that aircraft carrier, land on that aircraft carrier. But yeah, getting my Nintendo was a very fun, you know, I don't know if that's technically gaming, but receiving my gaming console, that was a good one. Of course, beating the first Legend of Zelda was a very epic experience for me as a child. Castlevania 2. These are a couple of the games that I had growing up, because back in the day, you know, you talked about listening to my podcast and talking about rentals. You know, you only owned four games, maybe five games. You know, you got a game at Christmas and birthday, that was about it. So I only had a handful of games. So beating those games that I did own was quite the experience and quite the memory. Other than that, you know, doing the weekend rentals, you know, going, picking up a game that, you know, I grew up in a small town, so you guys are probably used to saying going to Blockbuster. I went to a video rental place called Taters. I'm not making that up. That was the name of the place. And I would go to Taters and I would rent whatever, you know, I wanted to play. It could have been CB3, could have been, you know, Super Mario 3 before I got my copy, could have been anything. That was a lot of fun and very fond memories. Just those early times of gaming and the way, that we experienced gaming versus the way we do now. I miss some of it. Some of it I don't, but you know, those kind of memories.
Now imagine if like that, the video game was a fad, just like your father said, where would we be now, you know, with all this, you know, technology of future consoles and achievements and stuff, you know,
or in factories or something. I don't know, right?
it's just a fad, you know. Yeah. It's just gonna pass.
That's right.
I mean, technically, with the Atari and the crash of the, you know,
to be fair, this was not that long after that. This was 86, right? Because I'm not old, right? So this was 1986, and you know, there was that video game crash, which I didn't know about as a kid because I was totally unaware of that kind of stuff. But he could have been looking at that, and that could have been what he was saying. But yeah, he just wanted it to be a surprise. He was like that.
That's a good surprise. I remember, you know, having some kind of situation when I was younger like that, mm-hmm. And you know, not getting that console I really wanted, but somehow eventually getting it. It's really surprising.
Oh, yeah. And you're fooled when you're a kid because, you know, your parents they don't lie or anything like that. I'm not getting you that console. Like, come on, please, Dad. That was, you know, usually the reaction. And all the while, he was in the back of his head. He was laughing. He's like, yeah, you just wait till Christmas, buddy.
Since we're all streamers here, I think we mentioned a few times, all three of us, our story. What's first started you, or hold on, how did you get started with Twitch streaming?
That's interesting, because I never planned to do it. I honestly didn't. And even when I started doing it, I wasn't planning to do it. I was just planning to try it out just to see what it was like. But I wanted to do a YouTube channel, which I still haven't really gotten into. That's part of what my podcast is going to be working on, building YouTube presence. But I originally wanted to do YouTube stuff, and I was really camera shy, and I was really shy to talk on a microphone. I know you wouldn't know it now, but when I first started, I was nervous. So I was like, well, how can I do some kind of immersion therapy? How can I throw myself to the wolves, force myself to do something so I can get good or get comfortable in front of the camera and on the microphone? And about that time, I think I saw video angry video game nerd, because I've been watching his content, but him and the other guy, Mike Matei, they do these James and Mike Mondays where they play video games on the couch, and it's kind of like a stream, but they're doing it on YouTube, so I think it's like pre-recorded and then they upload it. But I watched that, I was like, you know, that looks like fun. And they were playing Castlevania 2, which I actually love Castlevania 2. I know everybody hates it, but I love Castlevania 2. They were playing through it, and I was like, you know, that looks like fun. I bet I could do that. And then I thought, and then I remembered hearing about Twitch, and I was like, you know, I don't have to really, you know, plan out anything. I don't have to write any scripts. I could just throw up a camera, throw on a retro game, and just talk, you know, to the camera and play the game at the same time. Then I'm not, you know, I have something to focus on other than being on the camera, which is the game. And I was like, well, what about the talking? I was like, well, I'll play an RPG because it's got dialogue. I can read the dialogue and that'll fill in the gaps of me not knowing what to say. And that's really what when I first started. So I threw up and Chrono Trigger, it was my first game I ever streamed. And it's also going to be my first RA game, but it was the first game I streamed. I threw that on. I did the stream of that. And at the end of the playthrough, I was like, you know what? That was really fun. I really love doing that. I'm going to continue doing that. So I kept doing it and I kept loving it. And then I started getting invited on to do charity events and things like that. And then, you know, I started saying, you know what, I there's something here, you know, I'm providing something that people are finding value in. And it's being shown in regard of getting invited to participate in these really awesome charity events. I'm not going to name drop on any of the charity events, but you know, it was just, I was honored and it felt really good. And I got that community warmth from everybody, you know, just, you know, showing me the love all through. I mean, from the very first stream, there were people coming in showing me the love, which really says something about this community. And yeah, I just fell in love with it, just going through all that and meeting the different people. And, you know, and it was all because I was too shy to get in front of a camera to do a YouTube channel. And I don't ever plan to stop. It's so much fun. I love it a lot.
That's awesome. I'm amazed that you got the courage to go in front of a camera like that. I actually started doing my first stream without a camera because I had the same exact fear. I was like, oh man, I don't want to show my face in front of a bunch of different people who
scary at first.
May or may not, you know, be on my stream.
Right.
So I kind of like did my first month without a camera, and then people were asking me like, hey, you should, you know, bring a camera. And I was like, oh man, they're like so expensive. So that's really awesome that, you know, that you got the courage to go in directly, you know, with the camera.
Yeah, it's one of those things like when you're going to jump in the pool on a summer day and you just know the water's cold, right? And you know when you jump in, it's going to be a shock. But you know if you do it, and the sooner you do it, you know that you're going to adjust and you're going to acclimate to it, and it's going to feel fine. And it's, you know, after a while, it's going to even, you know, after a few minutes, it's going to feel good being in that water. And that's kind of how I approach it. It's like, okay, I'm just going to jump in. I'm just going to do it. Because if I think about it, I'm never going to do it. So I did. And that's how I did. That's the same thing I did with the podcast. I was like, I'm just going to do it. I just have to do it. If I don't just do it, I'll never do it because I'll overthink it. I'll overanalyze it and I'll get stuck in that mode.
Yeah, you don't know if it's going to work out. If it works out, it works out. If it doesn't work out, well, at least you tried, you know? Yep.
Just rip that Band-Aid off. That's how I approach it. Just do it. And that's what I did.
Exactly. Speaking more about, you know, challenges and stuff like that, staying out from the crowd can be a challenge on Twitch. And what makes your stream unique?
I don't know that I'm actually that unique other than I just have a kind of a silly sense of humor and I like to joke around a lot and I'm really friendly and welcoming to people when they come into my chat. And I think that's, you know, I think that's really inviting. And I think people respond to that. I don't know that that necessarily makes me unique though, or makes me stand out. But I guess I have a unique sense of humor, I suppose. And people kind of latch onto that. And I take a joke very well. So I'm really good with people teasing me. You know, you can come to my channel, you can tease me, you can call me names and stuff. And I just let it roll off because, you know, I don't take it too seriously because I don't take myself too seriously. And I think, you know, you can go too far in either direction, but I think it's important not to take yourself too seriously. So I try not to. So I just try to have a good time with it. And I just try to, you know, showcase the games and showcase my personality to the best of my ability. And really that's all I do. And for whatever reason, you know, I've been able to develop, you know, I'm not trying to say I'm like the biggest streamer ever. I mean, I got a medium sized audience, I would say, but I was able to obtain an audience just by being myself. And I think that's important for people to do. And I think people see that and they latch onto it, but does that make me unique? I'm not really sure, but either way it's been, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
I've looked at a few of your streams before, and I noticed that you kind of do like these effects and stuff. Like maybe that's a unique thing that you want, like
You mean like the little memes pop up? Not incredibly unique because I've seen other people do it. I think it might be unique in the way I do it, in that I do it kind of like it's a cutaway gag, kind of like on Family Guy. That's how I interpret it in my head. But it's basically linked through my stream deck. And like if I die for the 15th time on a game, or I get a game over on something I've been trying really hard, I can hit a button and then Calculon from Futurama pops up in front of my camera. So it completely blocks me out and he just screams, "No!"
That makes sense.
And it disappears.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
So, kind of experience.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of the way, I guess that would be the unique angle of it. I don't pop it out anywhere on the screen. It completely covers my head. So it's meant to be kind of like a cutaway gag, kind of like what you would see on Family Guy, but in a live stream environment. It's kind of a fun thing. I like
that's
it.
That's really funny. I wish I saw that, but maybe I'll see it soon. Mm-hmm. That's really funny.
I use them all the time. I got like 6 different effects. I need to add some more actually.
How do you decide which games to stream?
That's another one. I go basically whichever way the wind blows as far as my own feelings on it. So, I mean, I just something popped in my head the other day, you know, well, a couple of weeks ago, actually, about Chrono Trigger. I'm going back to that I wanted to play that. So I started in my head. I was like, okay, I got some certain things I got to get done before I do Chrono Trigger, because I made some promises to my community, like Lee Clips, one of my moderators. I've been promising her to do a Resident Evil 3 playthrough, which I finished yesterday. And then and this is something that my viewers like to troll me on a lot. It was a game that I really don't like. It's Adventure Island. Anyway, we had a community goal to play Adventure Island 2, which we didn't make. But my community put in so many points and they put in such a great effort, I'm going to go ahead and play it anyway. So we're going to be doing a weekend of Adventure Island 2, which is what we were working on. And then I'm going to be getting to Chrono Trigger. So right now, my only strategy is, you know, what do I got to do so I can get to Chrono Trigger? And then usually it's just whatever I feel like playing. I don't really theme out my gameplay selection, but I've been kind of rolling around in the back of my head, kind of an idea, kind of way to incorporate it with retro achievements, really, because you see people gravitate towards certain genres. And you could do that within the retro, like I talked about survival horror games earlier. I thought, well, what if I did all the survival horror games for PS1? You know, just did them back to back. You know, we could do Resident Evil, we could do Dino Crisis, we could do Clock Tower, and you know, whatever else that's on you know, PS1, to maybe work on achievements for those type of games to provide a unique type of content. But then, you know, other times I'm like, well, May's coming up and May's got, you know, Star Wars Day, May 4th. Why don't we do, you know, like some Empire Strikes Back and the old SNES Star Wars games during the month of May. So that might be something I do, or maybe I'll play KOTOR because that's my favorite Star Wars games, Knights of the Old Republic. We might play that in May. So I'm just now starting to play with the idea of kind of theming out my choices and really starting to have more of a coherent plan as far as what I play. But up until now, it's just been whatever, you know, whatever I particularly feel like playing in that moment. It's always based upon my own just feeling at the time.
I was actually gonna ask like a similar question to theming, like I at Halloween I did like a Halloween kind of gaming thing, not doing all achievement stuff, but I kind of was like, oh, let me play this game this day and this. Right. I was gonna ask like, do you have any plans for that kind of stuff, like theming like October? But like you said, yeah, Star Wars, that's really cool.
Yeah, Star Wars month would be May, and then October, yeah, we could do survival horror in October. That is if I don't go with the other plan, because right now these are kind of plans that I'm rolling around. I haven't really put pen to paper on yet. But yeah, theming is definitely something I'm interested in. I think that could be a great way to build good content, and I think that would be a lot of fun to watch.
I think it does. Mm-hmm. I tell you, generally towards platformers, like you said earlier, your favorite genre is platformers. Mine mm-hmm. is also platformers. So Adventure, I haven't played Adventure Island, but I know that I've seen some people play Adventure Island too. So that'd be definitely a cool game to watch too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to trying it out, even though, like I said, we meme on it a lot because I really had a bad time with Adventure Island 1. I'm just not going to mix
it word.
Yeah. That, especially when you get to world level 8 too, that thing kicked my butt all over the place. It was not
try that sometime.
Yeah, so yeah, my viewers like to tease me about Adventure Island a lot.
This is another question that's kind of similar, but not exactly. What types of games do you make feel, or what types of games do you feel make best for streams? Are the best streams?
Yeah, see with retro, it's really cool because, and we can get into how my views on the retro directory and Twitch as a whole, all positive, of course. I lost track of the question. What types make the best content? So I started out doing RPGs, and I want to like RPGs as a good way to make content on Twitch, and they can be, but they're a little bit more difficult to get right because there's a lot of downtime in those. And then platformers are another one that I really like, and they can be very exciting. However, they do, especially when you're working on achievements or if you're doing a speed run for speedrunners, I would imagine it's the same. It requires a lot of focus. So it's kind of hard to keep up with, you know, what's going on in chat when you're doing those type of things. So it's good content in one respect, but in other ways, there's a little bit of a drawback. I really kind of lean in towards survival horror because it seems to be there's a little bit of both worlds in there in that There is a little bit more involved, like, you know, equipment management and things like that, that you would do, which would be RPG-ish. And then it's also a little bit, there's a little bit more excitement to them because you have, you know, things like jump scares, or it might be spooky, and it creates that atmosphere and things like that. And it makes for good content when you have jump scares and too, that you could in them too, that you can share with the audience. So I don't know that that necessarily makes it the best content though, or best for streaming though, because it's a highly subjective subject. So it's going to depend on the streamer and the audience. But I think one of the genres I've had the most fun with and have been really great for not just viewership, but been a lot of fun for everybody involved has always been the survival horror genre.
Yeah, sometimes the best moments of a stream is like whenever something randomly happens. I know, like I mentioned before, the Halloween streams I've done, those are like, I would say probably my best streams, because it's just so many things can happen, mm-hmm. and I either freaked out or I have some alerts and stuff that happens. Like you can just do a command and like it'll scare me.
Yeah,
sometimes it won't. You know, it's kind of like depends on the feeling of the stream.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like sometimes you can't figure out what the best content is. I know. RPGs, I like RPGs, but at the same time, it's like they can drag on between, you know, struggling or.
Yeah, I love RPGs, but it is harder to make engaging content with them, I think. Not impossible. People could do it. I've seen people do a really good job with, like, Chardmuck is a good example of that. He's one of my favorite guys, and he does really good with RPGs. And I've been able to do some good with RPGs, but I find if I limit myself only to that genre, then I do experience a lot of downtime, and they can kind of drag, especially when you get some of these PS1 RPGs that are like four discs long and things like that. You know, that's why I'm diving into Chrono Trigger, because Chrono Trigger is an RPG, and it's got definitely, it's heavy. You know, it's not the most RPG, if that makes sense, there is. So I think you can get through that, and it's a little bit less of that kind of grindy feeling that you get from.
I feel like Chrono Trigger is also one of those games that's a fan favorite.
Yeah.
Almost so as, like, you know, Final Fantasy, but I think the Final Fantasy is more diverse because there's so many games, right. But Chrono Trigger, it's like, oh, I have this big giant.
It's cross appeal. It's got a lot of cross appeal to different types of people. Doesn't necessarily have to be a hardcore RPG fan to really get into it.
Just to go more in deep with, you said your favorite moments was the jump scares kind of streams. Mm-hmm. What can you describe? What was your favorite moment of those streams?
Okay, so let's see. Might be, this is a silly one, and I think it might even be my most watched clip, but there was one of my viewers one time, I was playing Resident Evil 2, PS1, the original, not the new one. And it was my first time playing through the game. I was in the Raccoon Police Department. Of course, that's the whole game, obviously. But I was looking for something, and one of the guys in chat was like, "Hey, go look. There's like there's a clue over there by this window. Why don't you go over there and look at the window?" Cool. Of course, you know he was debating me. Yeah, yeah. He's like, "Why don't you go over this window? There's going to be this audio clue for you." And I'm like, "Okay." So of course, I go over there, and he nails me with my jump scare alert. It's Billy Mays from the old infomercials. Yeah, so Billy Mays comes up. Yeah, Billy Mays. He comes out. He screams, "Billy Mays here!" And he just—it's so freaking loud. And I damn near jumped out of, or excuse me, I darn near jumped out of my chair when he hit me with that. But it was so funny because it was the perfect debate, because I totally fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. I totally thought, "Oh, now I'm going to figure out where to go next." And he just made me jump out of my seat. And it was—I laughed and I yelled, and it was an amazing moment. It was a lot of fun.
Like I said, mentioned before, like the randomness of some streams make the best streams, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
During the time of you streaming, what have you learned during these times of streaming games and stuff like that? If that makes any sense.
No, I'm thinking. No, it makes perfect sense. I've learned that I am. And this may sound selfish, but I don't mean it that way. But I've learned that I am more capable than I thought I was. That I have some talents that I never thought I had, and that being a part of community was filling a void that I didn't even know that I had in my life. Which by that I mean. Especially with the lockdowns and everything, we become quite isolated. But even before that, I was somewhat myself. And you don't have that human connection, even though I'm married and I love my wife dearly and I have that human connection with her, obviously. But sometimes you need that outside human connection, especially with something around a shared interest. And I learned that the value of that friendship is far greater. Than I had ever realized. And now that I have that, I am eternally grateful, and I hope never to lose that again, because that is so vital to us as human beings. Especially in this time that we're living through, that I'm not going to get too deep into, that that human connection is so important, and that there is a lot more positivity in the world that you know, than we know, through our information sources. I know it sounds like I'm getting deep into something, but I'm not really trying to. But what I'm trying to say is there is a lot more positivity out there than people realize, and that even though things seem dark right now, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that there are people that care, and there are amazing people out in the world that care about each other, and that the world is a beautiful place when you can look at it through that lens. And that requires community, and that's something that I have gathered and learned through streaming and through Twitch, that I treasure and will treasure for the rest of my days.
Definitely couldn't have said any better myself, dude. I mean, that's an awesome speech about, you know, that kind of stuff, especially with the time we're going through right now with the, you know, the virus and stuff like that. It's kind of getting harder, and it's a struggle.
It's from the heart. I mean every word of it.
Other than that advice, do you have any other advice for people who are interested in streaming but are unsure how to get started?
Well, it depends on what they're unsure of. I mean, technical, if you're unsure just like how to technically do it, like how to run the software and stuff like that, obviously, you know, I can give tips, you know, in my Discord if you want to, but there's also YouTube tutorials. But if I would say start out as a viewer, for one thing, and, you know, streamers are really open about, you know, the process, and, you know, they'll talk to you about it. You can ask them questions. Most streamers would be happy to answer any questions about streaming. We'd love to talk about it, to be honest. So that would be one place to start, you know, just start out as a good viewer, be a good community member. I found that the people, and this is me, I started without being an active community member first. And if I had, done it the other way, I think it would have, been a little bit better. But I found that the people who start out just out of the blue, they start out a little slower than people who have already started out as really active members in the community, people's chats, and people get to know them through the other chats, and then they start streaming, then everybody gets excited about it, and everybody starts, hey, this guy, remember this guy, he was so awesome in the other streamer's chat, he's streaming now, let's go check him out, you know. So you can actually kind of get ahead of the curve if you do that, so to speak. If you're like me and you are just nervous about getting started because, oh my God, I won't know what to say in front of the camera. Oh, I can't have my face on the camera. I people looking at me makes me, my advice is just try it. You can start out like you did with, that started out with audio only. Start out with audio only. A lot of people do a good job with just audio. Just get a good audio setup. It doesn't have to be really fancy or expensive. It just gets you like a Blue Yeti or a Blue Snowball, you know, USB mic, get you a good one, and go live, and just don't overthink it. Don't think ahead of what it's going to be like. Don't, you know, just leap in with both feet, try it out, see if you like it. You might find that even if you don't have an audience to begin with, you just like the experience of having the game on and one or two people coming and watching, just saying hi, and build it from there. It's such a low bar of entry. It's so easy to get into. It's one of those things that's really easy to get into, but it's really hard to do at the top level. But you can do it at any level you want. You could go and you could just go live and you could have three friends watching. You can have a good time and that could be all you ever do. And you could be happy with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. Or you could go and you could stream, like me, I'm, you know, 20 to 30 viewers. Usually that's, you know, a little bit upper level. That's great. And that's fun. Or you could shoot for, you know, you could shoot for the top of the directory. There's really no wrong way to approach doing it. Don't compare yourself to other people. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Just have the best time you can and be yourself, go live. And people will gravitate towards that. And if you find you don't like it, then at least you could say, hey, I gave it a shot. I tried the thing. It's not for me. Now I know. And then you don't have that looming over you. You know, just do the thing. And if you're nervous about it, if you got any questions, just reach out to the community. This community is wonderful. They will open. They will welcome you with open arms, and they will fall in love with you because they fall in love with everybody because they're that great. So don't be nervous. Just do it.
100%. Like, you know, I've had like the camera stuff, I was kind of shy about that, but also at the same time, I was like, I wasn't expecting anything to come out of it. Like, you know, you kind of have to go
open arms in the whole thing, not expecting anything. And, you know, it's like I wasn't sure about this whole Twitch streaming. And now I'm really into it. You know, you just got to try it, see if it works out. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, you know.
There are many different ways to measure your success. And I always go with measure against yourself before you measure against other people, because if you're always chasing what other people have, then you'll fall short almost all the time. But if you're just shooting, being better today than I was yesterday, just improving on what I've already built, it will build so fast. You won't even realize it. And the next thing you know, you'll be the greatest success you could possibly be.
Definitely. Always go for improvement. You know, I always tell myself, oh, I got more stuff to improve on. Mm-hmm. I'm always not 100% like, you know, perfect or anything, but at the same time, it's like, I can always, you know, change, take suggestions, you know, instead of criticism, you just kind of take it. Oh, I could take maybe 50% of that and apply it to my stream, or be 25, whatever.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
Just curious about this thing, but how did you come up with your name, Budcave TV, on Twitch?
There's a little bit of a backstory. Excuse me, I have to start with the name Bud, because that's where that came from. My actual name is Sean, but I go by Bud in a lot of circumstances. It's more of a nickname. It's actually my late grandfather's name. It's actually his nickname. But the way when I started using it was before he passed away. I started working in a call center job. This is a weird way to start a nickname, sorry. But I started working in a call center job, and the call center had a rule that no two people in the company on the phones can have the same first name. Meaning if somebody already has your name, you have to pick they called it a phone name. We'll just call it a nickname that you will go by on the phone. And their reasoning behind that was, and I think other companies have done this too, but they want people to be on a first name basis, the customers, when they call into the call center with whoever they're talking to. So they don't have to say, oh, I need to talk to so-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. I could just say, I want to talk to Tim, or I want to talk to Sean, or whatever. So somebody was already a Sean, so I had to pick a name. They gave you a book of names to pick with. I'm just said, oh yeah, my grandpa's nickname is Bud. I'll just use that because I was close with my grandpa, so, and he was cool with it. So I started going by Bud at that job, and then it kind of stuck. I kind of kept using it. You know, I would use it off and on throughout the years since then. And I actually stopped using it for a long time. And then I was going to start streaming. I'm like, well, do I want to use my real name, or do I want to use your nickname, or, you know, or how do I want to approach this? And I'm like, you know, I'll just go with Bud because, you know, it's short, it's punchy, it's easy to remember. You know, it's like you're everybody's buddy. It's short for buddy. So I know I'll just go with that, you know. And I first started out using, you know, Bud Paget, which is my last name with my nickname. And then after a while, I kind of decided, you know, I think I would rather have more of a branding. And we've always kind of nicknamed the room my man cave, so to speak, the Bud Cave, because it kind of sounds like Bat Cave a little bit. And I was like, you know, I'll just go with Bud Cave. And then I'll just add the TV on there just to, I don't know, because it looked nice. Not a lot of thought process in the TV part of it, but I'll just go with Bud Cave TV because it sounds nice. And then I can use the acronym BCTV. And I liked the sound of BCTV. I thought that sounded kind of cool too, because if you think about it, BC kind of sounds, you know, old, you know, BC before Christ, you know, in time. And then I was like, well, BCTV, I'm playing retro games, you know, so there's kind of a hidden meaning in there that I didn't even think of. I was like, that works too. I'm like, Bud Cave TV. And that's the silly story of how I picked the name.
I like that story. That's a really good story. It's kind of similar to mine, because my name was Sizzle, like a coworker kind of nickname. But okay. So I like the story. It's always like a good, you know, starting conversation sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
streamer, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no real profound meaning in it or anything. It was just a matter of I had to pick a name or couldn't take a job.
It rolls right off the tongue too, Bud Cave TV.
Bud Cave TV, yeah, exactly. And it lends a lot of butt jokes, but you know, there's a, I get those a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking about the other way direction, like maybe like a butt of a cigarette or something. Anyways, what are your favorite hobbies outside of gaming? I know we spoke about like modern gaming and stuff like that, like VR stuff, but I also got a VR myself, Quest 2.
Yeah. You know, I used to do a little bit of web design as a hobby. I don't really do that anymore. I kind of got out of that. You know, I like to mess around with my Plex server when I'm not doing. I got a Plex server in the other room running on it's running on a Linux host. It's also my file server. I'm an ex IT guy, so I tinker with computer stuff quite a bit. That's really it. You know, since COVID, before COVID, I did a little bit of, I like to bass fish. So I used to have a boat. I ended up getting rid of it though. But I used to do bass fish. I never really fished in tournaments or anything like that. I just go out for fun and just, you know, catch and release and just, you know, waste an afternoon on the boat and just, you know, get out of the house kind of stuff, which, you know, it's, I think it's important to, you know, get out in the outdoors. I'm looking forward, you know, to when we can do that again. Without restriction. And other than that, I kind of every now and then I'll bang around on my guitar, but I'm not really that good at it. So I don't do it on stream or anything. It's just something I like to, it's something to de-stress with. I like to play some metal on that every now and then. I'm kind of a old school metalhead. Or at least I used to be. These days I listen to pretty much everything, but, you know, I like to bang around on bang out some Metallica or something on that, you know, just in my room here and have some fun with it. That's really about it. You know, my wife and I like to watch, and this is silly, but we like to watch, and we're retro. We like to watch 70s sitcoms on TV at night. So like All in the Family, The Jeffersons, we're actually watching Barney Miller right now. And I know it's weird kind of hobby, but I don't even know if it's a hobby, but it's something that me and the wife enjoy because it's something we remember, you know, watching in syndication, like on Nick at Night and stuff like that. And that's a lot of fun. But yeah, that's really about it.
She might want to like wonder about this as well, but do you watch any scary movies at all?
You know, and that's funny because I talk about survival horror games. I don't really watch that many horror movies. I mean, I've watched them in the past. I used to like the Friday the 13th movies quite a bit. Nightmare on Elm Street was another good one. I haven't really watched any of the, I think the most modern horror movie I watched, and this is years old now, was that Cabin in the Woods. I think that's the most recent one. I watch. I don't really keep up with them. You know, movies wise, I'm more sci-fi comedy. You know, those are usually my two genres go to for movies. But I do enjoy movies when I get a chance. Yeah, yeah.
Big sci-fi. Not much so much horror, but I know I'll probably shoot my one when I ask that question. Lead up with that. Maybe. I had a feeling. I know you mentioned like fishing and that kind of stuff, but more so, have you tried like maybe doing like gaming fishing or I don't know?
Didn't they have a really cool fishing game on the Dreamcast or something? I actually thought about it for a short period of time, and then for whatever reason, I got distracted and I haven't gone back to it. I can't remember the name of it. I downloaded it even. There's a free fishing game out there that you could download that's, really involved. I mean, really in depth and well done from what I've seen. And forgive me, I cannot think of the name of it to save my life, but, I've thought about it. It might be something interesting to do on like a Sunday afternoon or something, just, you know, kind of, get out of the norm, just something different. Yeah. That might be something to think about.
There's also fishing VR games too. You may be on like,
VR. That'd be cool. I would actually like that, as silly as that sound. I would probably really enjoy a fishing VR game.
It'd be pretty cool to see on stream, maybe. I'm not sure if, you know, people would. I don't know. I haven't really done any sport games myself.
VR seems, I've seen one or two VR streams. It seems like it's tricky to pull off. It seems like one of those things that's tricky to do well is to do a VR game with keeping, you know, trying to keep up with chat. And I know they have chat overlays that you can have so you can read chat, but I think you have to like turn your head and look behind you. And yeah, it's something that would be interesting if it could be done well. And I think it can be done well. I'm just not sure how.
Have you tried playing your guitar on a stream at all? I've thought about it. I play bass myself here and there, but
no. But here's, I deleted the VOD. I accidentally went live when I was banging around on my guitar one time, and a couple of my viewers thought I was trying to record, and I think I clicked start stream instead of start recording, and I didn't even realize it until the next day. Until one of my viewers was like, "Hey, I saw you playing your guitar last night. That was kind of fun, but you weren't talking." I was like, "Because I didn't know I was live." But other than that, no, I have not tried to do that.
Just one last question before I shoot over to Draco. Mm-hmm. Tell us about a fun fact about yourself. It can be anything, something that people wouldn't expect, or just, you know, a little tidbit.
Yeah, that's really hard because I'm such an open book. I talk pretty openly in my chat. I robbed a liquor store when I was a teenager. I guess that's something that people would know about me. It's not like it sounds. It wasn't like a gunpoint thing or anything. And this is something I regret deeply. I want to make that clear. But no, I think I was like 16 and we were trying to impress some girls, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, we were trying to go to a party and we were trying to bring some stuff, and I probably shouldn't give all the details, but there was a friend that his mom worked there and she let him work there sometimes. This was the 90s. And, anyway, he went back and he started shoving bottles of alcohol out the back loading door, and me and another guy were collecting them and hiding them to take to this party later. this was a stupid thing I did, but it's a fact I've never, I don't think I've ever talked about it on stream.
I'm not too much a drinker myself because I never drink, I never wanted to drink any kind of alcohol, but that must be like, what an interesting, like, so, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to feel about that one.
Yeah, I know, I was trying to think of something interesting. They, like I said, this was many, many years ago, and I am many times over reformed since then. I don't believe in stealing. In fact, I'm very much against it, adamantly. You know, I was, it was one of those things, that stupid teenager things that I did that I shouldn't have done. And I paid a big price for it because we got caught. I paid the price. I did what I had to do. There was probation involved and things like that. But it's just one of those things that, you know, I'm not proud of, and that may be why I never talked about it until now. And now I'm like, maybe I should have brought it up. But there it is.
Well, now we know.
And every time we do something in life, we always learn something about it.
Yeah, as long as you can learn from it. Yeah, as long as you can learn from it. And I did. I never did that again, and I advise never doing that.
So before we end the episode, I would like to thank you, Budcave, for taking the time to be with us today. You have been a fantastic guest. And I think people are going to really enjoy this episode. Do you have any final comments that you would like to share with us?
First off, I want to thank you, Draco, Shootsy, and King Sizzle for inviting me to be on your podcast. I've had a wonderful time. This was very, very easy to talk to you guys and tell the stories. Your podcast, you guys were telling me about how you enjoyed my podcast. I've actually listened to the Maximilian podcast, and the Retrosexual podcast. And I'm about, probably 20-30% into the Veritasu, podcast. And I really enjoy your content, and I'm really humbled and honored as somebody who's quite frankly a newbie and not anywhere near the top of the ranks. It was really surprising and humbling, and I'm really honored to be here. And I want to thank you so much for inviting me on here. And I also want to thank the retro achievements community at large, as well as the developers that work insanely hard to make this possible. And you guys that do the, that make the sets, which, you know, we couldn't do that without you guys. So I just want to say thank you to everybody that's involved in all of that stuff. It's been a wonderful experience doing the podcast, as well as, you know, doing retro achievements in general. And I look forward to continuing this journey, and I'm just grateful that it's there and that this opportunity is there for us to pursue.
Like I said, that's really an honor for me to invite you, and you're a very, very awesome guest. And I mean, maybe in the future we can plan something else if you want to come back into the podcast as well.
Oh, anytime, just let me know.
So yeah, thank you. You're down. That's perfect. So yep. Thank you again, Budcave, and thank you to your to all the listeners. We're gonna do this without the show without you all. The best way to be notified of new episodes of our podcast is to subscribe to the channels on YouTube, and make sure to click always the icon and put a like. That's all for today's episode of our podcast. But we look forward to seeing you back with us again soon. On that note, bye.